It's been 100 years since Cincinnati decided to begin work on a subway system. Only a little more than 2 miles of tunnels were built, and they've long been abandoned. We're going to talk about the history of this subway system and its possible future. My guests on Cincinnati Edition this afternoon on 91.7 WVXU are author of the book Cincinnati's Incomplete Subway, The Complete History, Jake Mecklenburg, and director of Leadership Cincinnati and Leadership Action with the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber, and historian with Applied History Associates, Dan Hurley. You can join the conversation. Call us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. To be back.
Certainly happy to have you both here today. And, you know, when I first moved to town decades ago, the story about the subway was out there. And then every 5 years or so, you'll hear another story about the subway. Let's sort of talk real specifically about how it all got started. Maybe, Dan, why don't we start with you, or is Jake better one for this? Just tell us, where did this all come from?
Let me kick it off, and then Jake can tell the real story. In the early 20th century, Cincinnati wanted to be like other big cities. There was also underlying this a sense that nobody should live in the basin, that for generations, people had been moving out of the basin, which was the city in the 19th century, to the suburbs. And the view was that everybody should live outside the basin. So how to make that possible was really the challenge. So it was in before World War I, there was a movement of reform to try to get a public transit system that would make it inexpensive, convenient for people to move out of the center and still get to their jobs in various places. And in the early 20th century, a lot of those jobs were relocating to the Oakley-Norwood area. So it was getting in out into that industrial, that new industrial area. And all of that got stalled by World War I, and then the actual construction doesn't start until after World War I, but it gets started with a sense of reforming the city and making it a better place for people to live based on the idea that nobody should live in what we would today call the downtown, which, of course, it's a very different situation today.
Right. There's actually in New York City, part of the reason why the subway system is so big in New York is because it was actually designed to allow people to live primarily outside of Manhattan, for Manhattan to be where people worked and they would go home and commute. And that's why they have the express tracks and everything in New York. Cincinnati obviously is nowhere near as big, but we did have housing density issues, which really over the Rhine is the only area that physically remains intact, which indicates how an area that once stretched all the way to the Union Terminal and down to the Ohio River. And that was also on the floodplain. So these homes not only were families living in very small apartments, they also got flooded out once every 5 or 10 years.
So the subway then, the city council decided, yes, this is a good idea, and
Let's remember here that this isn't just a subway. You mentioned that it's only 2.2 miles as subway, but this was a rapid transit system. The subway was a portion of that, and the whole system was a partial loop that went up and went out of the city through Northside and then was going to cross over basically where the Norwood Lateral is today, over into Oakley and Norwood, with the idea that someday it could possibly become – we could close the loop from the east side and make it circular. So almost all of that is above ground. So this is a rapid transit system. And it also, in the original design, was keyed into – feeder lines that came in, the electric interurban lines that were bringing people in from more distant places and from Indiana, from Batavia, from wherever. And it was feeding into that. And then how do we rapidly transport people to where they really want to go? So the subway is just a piece of that. It's just that's the piece that everybody is intrigued by and think that they need to talk about still.
Well, the subway was the cheapest subway ever built because it was built in place of the canal. And there was going to have to be about 8 blocks of real subway construction underneath Walnut Street from Central Parkway south to the riverfront. And that section never actually got built. And that's one of the great mysteries of the project. People ask, well, why did they build you know, the subway connection, the whole route up to Norwood, because it actually was finished all the way to Norwood, down to the edge of downtown, but not through it. And why did they decide not to build that essential piece first? And it's actually a very long explanation for why, but one of the reasons is that after World War I, the value of U.S. currency went way down. The price of building construction materials went way up. So I believe they rushed construction of the canal subway in order to permit the road to be built above it, to permit Central Parkway to be built quickly. And there's also another big sort of conspiracy theory part of the subway project, which was that Central Parkway's name is not an accident. It was envisioned by many for 50 years preceding this construction of the subway to become the central avenue of Cincinnati, to become the true center of the downtown. And so there was a lot of danger that the most valuable land would move from where Fountain Square still is, obviously, up about seven blocks to Central Parkway, and that would become the new downtown. And obviously a lot of the forces that conspired to defeat the subway even after it was after it had been built, that was a big part of it. You would suddenly have the most valuable land, and then you didn't have it anymore if you owned the department stores, if you owned the office buildings.
Wait, one of the things to keep in mind, as Jake was just saying, that there's the pre-World War I assumptions that were made in the levy that was passed. But then after World War I, basically the price of everything had doubled. A ton of steel, a yard of concrete, all of that had doubled. The other thing is, on a governmental side, the city was run by the gang, by the Heineken gang. You know, most people know it as the Cox machine or whatever. They'd never met a dollar they hadn't wanted to spend. So the money was there. They knew they couldn't complete the vision, but they were going to move ahead and spend that money. They should have stopped and said, wait a minute, conditions have changed, and we really need to go back to the public and find the money to really complete this if we're going to start it. But that wasn't their style. They were in their last days. They were in their last gasp by the end of World War I. It wasn't clear yet at that point. But by the early 1920s, the charter movement was going to suddenly emerge and pitch them out, and that was going to be the end of that. So it was irresponsibility on the part of the city government at the time. And also there was a desire to complete what the vision. Now, the other thing what Jake had to say about this vision of Central Parkway versus Fountain Square, the center of the Central Business District, the CBD, is if you go back to the 1907 Parks and Parkway plan by Kessler, I still think it's one of the best plans that was ever developed. And it imagined that this greenway that would ultimately connect the center of the town, City Hall, Music Hall, with green borders all around it. But Cincinnati is psychologically a very small place. We have a hard time imagining anything more than two blocks from Fountain Square. And that's still true today. Go back and look at the siting of the Aronoff. The Aronoff is where it is because it's just about two blocks from Fountain Square. Nobody could imagine anybody would go any farther. We are not New York. We are not Chicago. We are a relatively psychologically small place.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. You can email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're on Facebook and Twitter. We're talking today about the subways, and my guests are the author of the book Cincinnati's Incomplete Subway, The Complete History, Jake Mecklenburg, and director of Leadership Cincinnati and Leadership Action with the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber, and historian with Applied History Associates, Dan Hurley. And I just want to warn you, if you have a question, get it in early, because a lot of times we get towards the end of a show and that's when the phones ring. So 513-419-7100. So what's left now? You've talked about the whole loop and all these other things. Are we just left with this subway area?
Right. The above ground portions of the subway, there is almost no sign of them left. You know, if I were to drive you around, I could point to a retaining wall here and a retaining wall there. That's about it. There were actually three above ground stations that were finished, and they were torn down for Interstate 75. And then the section up in Norwood was graded, but they didn't actually build the stations up there. And that was replaced by the Norwood Lateral. Now, it doesn't follow it exactly, but it's very, very close, and they do overlap in a couple spots. The subway tunnel itself, you can see it from I-75. I just saw it a half hour ago when I was driving down here. The door is open, so I guess the waterworks is in there doing something today. And that's, you know, always been one of the big curiosities for Cincinnatians is we see this portal. Where does it go? Because if you go into the tunnel, you must go out on the other side. Where is the other end? Well, the other porthole was supposed to have been in Walnut Street between 3rd and 4th. So if you're down at Great American Ballpark, the subway was supposed to come above ground right there at that point and come onto a viaduct and then head out to the east side, basically where the 3rd Street Viaduct is now and onto Columbia Parkway. And the tunnel that is still there ends, ironically, right underneath the new streetcar tracks at Main and Central Parkway. So it comes all the way down Central Parkway, and there are three stations. There's one in Brighton, one at Liberty Street, and one at Ray Street, right there in downtown. And the area that's under the wide part of Central Parkway is much more complicated than the rest of the tunnel, which is just two parallel tunnels, like what I think people imagine. But down there around Race and Central Parkway, there's actually multiple tracks, and there are two Ys that turn off. And actually, there's also a water main in the subway now, and it's been there since the 1950s. So,
well, let's talk about how things changed. So it all started out around 1916 when there was talk about this, and it started getting going. And then it was abandoned at what point? What year?
Officially, 1928.
Was there ever talk again about bringing it back?
Sure.
Every 6 months. I mean, just I just think it's so hilarious to you read the newspaper and somebody writes a letter to the editor or some new reporter in town says, well, we got this subway. Why don't we do something with this? We can build it. You know, we can build more of it. Or, gee, we could shoot movies down there or whatever.
You do a wind tunnel or grow mushrooms or something like that.
I know.
Everybody has an idea.
But
are any of them viable?
I doubt it. Let's make it clear. It's not that it's not used. I mean, this water main that goes through is absolutely critical. Not to mention that this is in effect in the Central Business District along what we know as Central Parkway. It's a long bridge holding up Central Parkway. And so it must be maintained and well maintained. Otherwise, we'd have other kinds of problems.
And a collapse, don't. Right?
It would collapse, yeah. So it is used, but not in the way that it was originally intended. It doesn't go very far. And with the reconstruction of I-75, it's even got more cut off than it used to be. So I don't personally, I think that's not a discussion that makes a lot of sense.
Well, I think all the oddball ideas, you know, everybody seems to, for whatever reason, think there must be some useful alternate use for it. And, you know, if you've been in it, you understand it's not some spectacular underground space. It's like being in a basement or being in a parking garage. It's that sort of, you know, the pillars are kind of close and those sorts of things. So it's not really viable as like an underground Atlanta or that sort of thing, or even a bar or nightclub or something like that. I mean, it doesn't have barrel vaulted ceilings like our brewery lagering cellars have. It's not like that.
It's very sparse, and it wasn't meant to be seen. And even that station at Race and Central Parkway right there by the AAA building, when you go down into it, it's not particularly – it's not a New York subway station. It's not that big.
We have Andrew on the phone right now. And Andrew, you have some talk about what it's like inside the tunnels?
Yeah, I just – if you've ever had a chance to go down there, it's beautiful. The paintings and all the murals and stuff, it's quite a sight actually.
You're speaking about all the graffiti that has accumulated down there over the years? Or is there Sistine Chapel work down there I'm not aware of?
Where are you talking, Andrew? I mean, what have you seen? Okay.
All right.
Goodbye, Andrew.
Yeah.
All right. There's a lot of graffiti. Do people break in?
Over the years, sure. Lots of people.
One by one, yeah.
But the other thing is we took people down through our Sea Change program, our young professional program, probably for 6, 7, 8 years in a row. For the first time this last fall, we weren't able to do that. The recent rules were that you could go down when the waterworks had shut the water main down for servicing purposes so that if you know, it wasn't going to break and we weren't going to drown a bunch of people down there.
That's good.
But now, before you go down, you have to train everybody with exit training about that. So we weren't even able to go down this year. So I've been down, I don't know, 12, 15 times in my life, beginning first in 1985. But it has become very difficult to get down there officially, legally, to do that.
Yeah, I don't know where people are breaking in now, if they are. When I was a teenager, it was very easy to get in there. Those halcyon days have passed us by for any guys that are, you know, into jumping fences and potentially breaking a leg, because
a little more secure.
I really think people aren't going to like that I'm going to say this, but the tours, everybody wants to see it, but I don't feel like the tours really show you much or really help you understand the story. Because you're really only seeing just the one part of the tunnel, and it's really just such a complicated subject that you have to spend a lot of time, you know, reading about it.
It's this larger political sense that's important.
Yeah.
Our number is 513-419-7100. Anne's calling from over the Rhine. Hi, Anne.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm
Thanks
good.
Thanks for being here today.
Certainly. What's your thought?
I'm just wondering, this has probably already been addressed, but I thought I heard you talking about it when I called, but as far as what's left that's viable, what are your thoughts about, attaching the possibility of a rail system in the city? Because I really feel that's what we're missing, something that would be helpful for commuters and also, you know, to the outer suburbs and also just good for our environment. Any thoughts about that? Thanks.
In 2002, we had the countywide vote for Metro Moves, which failed. And that plan to use the subway tunnel for a line that was going to go to Northside and then out parallel to I-74 to North Bend Road and Rybolt. So you know, they are viable, and there's a federal match program where you use existing infrastructure in lieu of cash to the federal government, and then they give you a match. And St. Louis used that for their first light rail line. They had a much more useful tunnel than we did, because theirs actually went underneath the exact center of downtown. So, and I've talked to some people recently who think that the streetcar tracks that are brand new could be used, where streetcars could use the subway tunnel, and then they could surface in the center of Central Parkway and then use the tracks that already exist. So the problem with that, of course, is that the subway parallels the streetcar line until it gets to Finley Street. So we have sort of a redundancy issue there.
I think it makes a lot more sense at this point to talk about the role of the streetcar in certain areas, particularly in the Central Business District, getting up to the University of Cincinnati, the uptown area, the two major employment areas, and then talking about light rail in the long run going other places on surface, rather than trying to figure out how to put this tiny little piece that's a leftover and find another use for it. It's going to be much more useful for us to think about what the design of a total system ought to be.
Would Cincinnati be a different city today had that subway, that system, the transportation system ever been implemented?
Sure. I think what they didn't anticipate in the 1910s was that the University of Cincinnati and the hospitals obviously were going to grow into the top employers outside of downtown. And the subway plan, even if it had been built to its full extent, the 16-mile loop, wouldn't have touched on those areas at all. But what I think it would have really changed is it would have changed the sort of the pecking order of neighborhoods in Cincinnati. So we think of St. Bernard and Northside as sort of, you know, definitely below the east side neighborhoods, but they would have been higher ranking neighborhoods because they had this fantastic, very high-speed access to downtown. And then also O'Brienville, of all places, was going to have a station. And O'Brienville is, I heard comically, referred to as a business district without a neighborhood. I'm not sure there are that many houses that actually can be called O'Brienville. But there was going to be a station right there where Isles Nest Park is. And I think that area, it's very easy to envision 15 and 20-story high-rises right there, because it would have been about a 6 or 7 minute a subway ride to downtown from there. So, and then also the other east side stations, and this is the part of the loop that never was built. We're going to be right at Smith Edwards Road, where 71 is, and I'm blanking on the other one, and then going up to where Cincinnati Playing Card is. So, you know, Norwood, those areas, East Norwood and Oakley and Hyde Park, obviously are you know, very healthy neighborhoods. But I think those other neighborhoods would have been high on that list also.
Yeah, make no mistake about the impact of public transit on urban development. I mean, it has you, any city you go to, if you look at where if it has a good public transit system, the development patterns are very much defined by the stations. And so when we're talking today about light rail and as a way of concentrating and stopping the sprawl that exists and by making it attractive to live in the clusters around those stations, we can do it in the future, and it would have happened in the past, just as Jake was saying.
You mentioned the idea of which neighborhoods would have growth and it would be different and the pecking order would be different. But would it have been different for the whole city comparing Cincinnati to other areas? Do you think it would have remained more vibrant? You know, one time was one of the biggest cities in the country, and of course it is not anymore. Everybody was moving west. Would that have changed anything?
I don't think that it necessarily promotes overall growth of the metro. What I do think is it keeps money in areas that have already been built. And the real tragedy of the sprawl era is that, you know, we have all this infrastructure, you know, all these utilities, electric, sewer, water, that are being underused in cities like Cincinnati, where the population has gone down so dramatically since the 1950s. And so we have built all these sewers and everything 20 miles away from downtown. We have perfectly good ones right here that aren't being used because there are vacant buildings and empty lots all over the place. So I think it's been a big waste, you know, from that standpoint.
I agree with Jake. I don't think there are bigger forces at play that determine Cincinnati's position as a metro area in the nation as a whole. And it's not that we made some mistake by not building railroads or not building the subway or whatever. There were bigger forces at stake. But let's remember that the city of Cincinnati has not annexed anything since 1914. And if this had been built, even though it was inside mostly the city, but then over into Norwood, who knows what would have then been built off of it. And just as the streetcars determined the growth of the city out from the basin to 77 square miles. I mean, we reached out and annexed College Hill. We reached out and annexed Avondale. We reached out. All these were independent places. And then the streetcar made them accessible, and they wanted to join the city. I think with a different kind of system, we would have gotten a similar sort of growth. And what's the implication of that? A lot of wealth and talent move beyond the city limits. So this sort of donut effect of late 20th century cities, of center cities being isolated in terms of poverty and in terms of desirability, surrounded by collar communities where all the wealth is, I think they could have changed that.
And I think the death of the streetcar system in the 1950s was had much greater implications than I think anybody at the time believed. And that it comes from seeing the new streetcar systems that are built in some cities like Portland, Oregon, and then even the one old one that's still running in New Orleans. And you can just sense there's really something palpable and different about a streetcar neighborhood versus, you know, a neighborhood with buses. I think if we had at least kept the one that went up to Mount Adams and then up to the zoo, I think that would have been a fantastic tourist attraction. But I think, you know, the ones on Redding and Clifton Avenue and maybe Spring Grove, I mean, that would have made a big difference if we still had a couple of those still running.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. Gerard is calling from Western Hills. Hi, Gerard.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your thought today?
Well, I just wanted to tell you about when I was down in the subway, and this goes back to the early 80s. Back when I was in college, and we went down there and got in between the Parkway and the 75 there, and so we were going through the tube there.
You were not an invited guest, I take it.
Pardon?
You were not an invited guest into the tunnel?
Well, we didn't hear anybody invite us, but we didn't always need that back in those days.
Subway was calling to you.
So in the one tube was stacks and stacks. There must have been hundreds of these large tins, about 5 gallon, like a 5 gallon bucket, but they were tin, and they were full, and it said carbohydrate supplement on them.
Yeah.
And a lot of them had gotten rusty and they had fallen down, but we managed to find one that was still intact, and we opened it up, and inside it was full of a bunch of little like jawbreaker candy pieces. And it was called carbohydrate supplement. So I guess they were going to be a maybe a nuclear war and the city had to buy on something, that was going to be it.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. In the 1960s, Cincinnati received a small federal grant to convert the Liberty Street subway station into a quote-unquote bomb shelter. And so as a demonstration bomb shelter. So they built these showers, and there were some bunks down there, and they put a bunch of food and water down there. And I know a lot of UC students in particular stole a lot of the canisters you're talking about, and they ended up in Clifton Heights party houses and so on, because I've seen people actually have emailed me pictures of these things. So, yeah, I mean, you're not making that up.
They're all gone now?
They're all gone, yep.
Gerard, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Sorry about that. We're out of time, Gerard. I didn't mean to cut you off, but we are out of time. Thank you both for being here. We could have talked forever about this. Maybe we will again.
Thank you, Mary.
In another 3 years, people want him back again, right?
All right.
Thank you. We've been talking about the abandoned Cincinnati subway. My guests today were author of the book Cincinnati's Incomplete Subway, The Complete History, Jake Mecklenburg, and director of Leadership Cincinnati and Leadership Action with the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber, and historian with Applied History Associates, Dan Hurley.